allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers and know that you are blessed? I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
Hello, all of my dear sinners. Welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. If you're a longtime sinner, welcome back. If this is your first time sinning, this is the show where we talk about the religions of our past. And sometimes that's a band, like today's band is Weezer. And our guest is Patrick Ehlers, who just has a podcast come out called My Name is Weezer. And it goes through each album of theirs, if you're a big Weezer head, whatever you call them. And in that process, Patrick and his co-host, Jen Kleinrock, talk about what it's meant to them, and they explore their own relationships and their own personal stuff. So you should definitely check it out. It's on iTunes, Stitcher. And at the end of this episode, as we do every week with our guest, Patrick made up his own religion, and I think you guys will like it. And so without further ado, and without further Weezer music, please welcome Patrick Ehlers into your hearts, and please open those hearts and minds in an awareness of the rule of Jah. I have to admit that today was like a little bit of a study cram session of Weezer for me. Like, I was just like skipping through a lot of their albums because it's been so long. I used to be in love with the Blue Album, Paperton, liked Maladroit. Is that how you say it? Maladroit?
I mean, I think the conventional pronunciation is to hit the T and not go with the French pronunciation.
Oh, Maladroit?
Maladroit, yeah.
What? No way.
Yeah, I think so, man.
Is that Maladroit?
I don't think so.
It's actually, the French don't have the R. The French don't have the R like that. That's what throws me off about it.
Wait, like, which R?
The D-R-O-I-T. The dual.
I mean,
you don't pronounce that.
Adroit is a word. Adroit means like performed competently or well. So maladroit would be bad but good.
I have assumed for like 14 years that was a French word.
I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Holy fuck, you're disappointing 8th grade me too.
Well, I mean, hey, if Weezer podcast can do nothing, it can disappoint 8th grade versions of my friends,
yeah,
right?
Totally. That's very true.
No, it's been really interesting to like explore Weezer at a like on a critical level all through their various disappointments, and like everyone has a different disappointment point with the band.
I remember the Green Album being a popular disappointment point.
Yeah, Green Album was a popular disappointment point. I don't know. I was into it at that point. At that disappointment point.
It has great reviews if you look online.
It also has terrible reviews. Every single, except for Blue and Pinkerton, and even Pinkerton was fucking panned when it came out.
Yeah.
But everything but those two, like the reviews run the gamut. Like, I mean, Pitchfork gave Make Believe a 0.8.
Ooh.
A 0.8.
Ooh.
Like, that's a bad review.
That is bad. I was I remember not loving it when it came out, but then I heard Beverly Hills, the song, the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for some reason, I mean, granted, I was like still in high school when that came out.
Sure.
But the irony was lost on me of that song. I'm like, they're really like, oh, Rivers really sold out into Beverly. Right, he loves Beverly Hills.
I find that if you're willing to give Rivers Cuomo the benefit of the doubt,
that he won't punish you for it.
Exactly. Like, all of the music makes more sense. Yeah. It all feels better when you can be like, he's being stupid on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's not even that hard to make that leap because, you know, what's with these homies dissing my girl? Why do they got a front?
Yeah.
Like, we all give him that. You know? We're all like, we know that's stupid.
And I was going to ask those two questions to you directly, hoping you had an answer. What is with these homies?
What is with these homies and why do they got
and
a front?
Why do they got a front?
No one knows, man. It is a great unanswered question in all of Weezerdom.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it makes It makes sense. So what you said you did like a little like cram session homework. Yeah, so it sounds like you've been busy. Two rehearsals, two podcast recordings.
It's been a busy little Saturday for me. I know most of the Blue album like mm-hmm. back in front. I did notice like even listening back to that, like the first two songs on the Blue album.
Yeah.
My Name is Jonas and then what's the one right? The World Has Turned and Left Me Here.
Yeah.
Both start off with acoustic guitar intros, and then I feel like we never hear of an acoustic guitar in Weezer ever again.
Well, albums later we do.
I guess we do.
And there's a little acoustic guitar in the garage, I believe.
No, you're right. You're right. Well, there's a harmonica.
There's a harmonica,
well.
Too.
In the garage.
Garage. Yes.
Garage.
Like G-R-O-J.
Right. Garage. In the garage.
Yeah, I mean, you get late enough in their discography and, like, kind of everything's on the table texture-wise.
To open this up a little bit for anybody who might be listening who's not a Weezer head, or whatever you call a Weez.
I don't know that there actually is, like, a name, a Weez.
A Weez eater, a Weez poster.
It's hard because Weezer is already, like... A Weezer could be someone who's a fan of Weez. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. So you're just a Weezer-er.
Weezer-er. Yeah, let's go with that.
So people who are not into Weezer, your podcast is an in-depth discussion. What made you pick Weezer?
So the idea for My Name is Weezer, which is the name of the Weezer podcast, mm-hmm. Came just from... my friend Jen and I realizing that we had a lot to say about Weezer. Mm-hmm. And not, you know, we didn't think of it as like we have a lot to say about Weezer to the world or anything mm-hmm. like that, but just that it meant something to both of us and we wanted to talk about it. And this is sort of early in our friendship. And, you know, not that we don't have things to talk about otherwise, you know, I'm on an improv team with her, but like, she's 9 years younger than me.
Oh, wow.
Eight years. I mean, I'm a little bit of an old man in the improv community mm-hmm. anyway.
I mean, you are like 65.
I'm like 65 years old.
Yeah.
I'm really 33. but, you know, like that puts you on like a higher end in the scene. And so she's whatever that would make her, 24, 25. And it was so interesting to me that like we could talk about the same things, the same like moments, remembering when Make Believe came out.
Yeah.
And I was in college, you know, and she was in like junior high school.
Right.
It's just like, let's, there's something very interesting to me about like discussing those kinds of moments from different age perspectives.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. Anytime I'm like, you know, you go on like Reddit or something, you see, there's like people posting who are in high school. Like it's weird to like share.
Yeah.
Having like a shared forum with people where you don't know the age, but yet you do know they're.
Well, there.
And there's some old people on Reddit too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and everywhere.
Yeah. Old people are everywhere.
Old people and young people are everywhere. I had an experience recently where this was, I guess, just the end of the year. So I also write and edit for a comic book site called Retcon Punch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do like deep dive analysis of individual issues of comics. And at the end of the year, like anyone would, we did like our top whatevers of the year. Mm-hmm. And one of them that we discussed, or one of them that we were like celebrating as one of the best miniseries of the year, is this series called Godzilla in Hell, mm-hmm. which is exactly that. It's Godzilla. He's in hell.
Doing hell shit.
He has to fight his way out.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But, you know, it was like number six on our list or something, like of top 10, right? And someone on Twitter got so mad at us for not rating it more highly.
That's crazy. It's like it's already six.
Yeah, it's already number six of the year, right?
Yeah.
So, like, this person, like, really laid into us on Twitter, told us to get fucked to death.
Wow.
Yeah, get fucked to death. And I was having a tough time, a little bit of, like, because you can rationalize, like, oh, it's Twitter, people are assholes on Twitter.
Right, well, and then if you are a human being who values the opinions of just values the humanity of other human beings, you're going to value their opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what, like, help me process this. I was talking to my co-editor, Drew, and he was like, yeah, that could be a 12-year-old kid.
Right.
You know, like,
probably that, was.
He probably. Or yeah. Who knows? I don't really want to cast dispersions on the guy, even though he told me to get fucked to death. Yeah. Like, you know, what good could it possibly do to, like, engage in that?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I do think, like, I remember being younger, being so enraptured or hung up on those, like, Rolling Stones 500 greatest albums or whatever, or, like, 50 greatest guitarists in guitar world. Like, you... Yeah. God, the hierarchy, like, the need for somebody to objectively rank these things was so crucial, and I was like, oh, it mattered so much. I feel like now it's like, of course, I know they're just arbitrarily making choices after some limit, like, I don't know, you have tiers of, like, shit, of, like, yeah, I don't know, I have tiers of favorites, but I can't pick between, like, I don't know, like, American Beauty and, like, Spotlight or something. No. You know, whatever.
Well, and you don't live in a world where you have to.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. They're just different.
Would you say that you're able to express a favorite anything? Because I have a very, like, I can't, whenever someone, like, even as basic as favorite color.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not a question I can answer.
Normally, no. But I say favorite way easier than I say best.
Sure.
His favorite, I can at least say, I know I'm being biased here. I know it's just me. Don't everybody freak out.
Right.
It's just my opinion. It's just what I like.
It's passive aggressive, Jeff. I know you're all going to freak out or something.
It's a very common thread in my life. My favorite band is unequivocally Fish, and it always will be.
Right.
So, well, I don't know if it always will be. Chances are good. Always will be.
How long has Fish been your favorite band?
It's been over 10 years now. Over 10 years.
Would you say that they're your favorite band because there's a lifestyle that you can, like, associate with it? Mm. Or, like, just the music, favorite band?
Just the music. I mean, the lifestyle I've gone, like, and the whole, like, culture of getting into Fish and, like, discussing Fish online, or, like, going on, seeing a ton of shows in the summer, or just seeing one or whatever. Like, I've gone in and out of that in phases, but the love of the music has really never left. And I mean, people, they joke about Fish being a drug band or whatever,
right?
And even Fish fans joke about it being like it's our fucking little drug band,
right?
But well, yeah. But I was a sober Fish fan for like the first 3 years of getting into them. Like I didn't got them into high school when I was a complete like teetotaler. And it's for Fish, it's just the pure variety and the fact that every show is different. There's countless versions of the same songs that don't sound anything alike. Like one jam out of Tweezer won't sound like the next nice jam out of Tweezer.
Yeah, well, and I think that can be part of what I mean by the culture of the band.
Okay, like, yeah, yeah.
When I was in high school, I got really into the Smashing Pumpkins, and there's a healthy, and there probably is for most bands. So I don't know why I'm picking the Pumpkins specifically, but like there's a big culture, or was at the time, of trading bootlegs of shows.
Yep.
And yeah, like that can be its own thing where you're, you know, meeting people online and trading CDs.
Right.
Again, so this is me as this is high school me on the internet.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Maybe
I mean, that culture was absolutely there for Fish.
Yeah.
Because they kind of inherited that from the Grateful Dead too, that whole tape trading thing. It just predates me a little bit just because ever since I've gotten into them, everything has been available online pretty much. Right. For like, so like everybody took all those bootlegs and just like uploaded them. And so it's like easy, like a searchable database. Like it's fine.
But everything. Yeah. You know, if it's a soundboard recording or if it's,
but there still is a decent amount of effort. And I think that's what makes it so cherished is that there's like with bootlegs or whatever, anytime I have to work a little bit to keep digging and keep exploring. And it's not just like handed to me on a radio platter.
Well, it's like it's modern collector culture, right? Like, I like started to get worried as a kid. I played Magic, the Gathering.
I played Magic.
They're very good. Yeah. Literally, 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, all I did. Like, eat, sleep, drink, Magic the Gathering.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
Every problem I encountered in my life, I like
tap some land.
Yeah, yeah. I filtered it through and was like, all right, we're just gonna think about this in terms of magic. We'll be fine. You know, yeah. You don't tap the Sarah Angel to attack. It'll be great. What was my point? Oh, so, you know, I was big into, you know, collecting cards and, like, getting the decks that I wanted and, you know, getting Moxes and the three big blues.
Yeah.
And all of that stuff. And that when, like, eBay came along, I remember thinking, like, that's going to destroy collector culture because you don't have to find anything anymore. Everything is just out there.
Yeah, yeah. And
maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. Maybe it's just made... I feel like collecting is more of just like a money game now. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, how much money do you want to throw at something? Okay,
right.
Okay, fine. Now you have it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like if I wanted to get a Black Lotus now,
yeah,
I could do it.
So, and then that sort of... that completionist mindset, is that sort of... I'm just trying to... Is that something that you relate to like discographies of band, of like... Say Weezer.
Yeah, like say of Weezer. Yes and no. Completionism is something that I am trying to get away from.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I also play video games. I'm outing myself as like an enormous nerd on this. but I play a lot of video games, and I know that I've spent so much time boring myself playing a game that I'm supposed to have fun playing,
right?
Right. In the name of completionism.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I just don't do that anymore.
Yeah, but there's a lot of diminishing returns in that.
Yeah, I mean, but not like there are diminishing returns, but you almost have to like forcibly make yourself not do it. You know, like
yeah, it's addictive.
You have to be like, all right, I'm that. Quest, that one's off. I'm not going to do it. I'm not doing that one. I'm not collecting those 20 things or who cares.
Well, it's like a accomplishment porn. It's just like a little bit of a hit of like, oh, I did something. I made progress in some way in my life.
Well, and all you're doing is, literally all you're doing is changing one number. You're changing a number from one number to another number.
Yep.
Like, that's all you're doing.
Yep.
And like, you could do that on paper all day. You know, you don't need to... You don't need to slay four imps in order to do that.
Totally, yeah. So wait, how long have you been into... Have you been into them since the Blue Album came out?
Weezer?
Yeah.
No. So, I was kind of late coming to pop music, like, just in general. My older sister and my parents... I have two sisters. Mm-hmm. One 5 years older, one 5 years younger.
Mm-hmm.
And my older sister and both of my parents, like, don't... listen to music. It's not like a thing that they do, right? So I didn't grow up with music. I didn't grow up hearing like Beatles records or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So my like introduction to music came from my buddy Pete Farr, and I've been in maybe three or four ska bands with him. So my first like music to me was ska for the longest time. Until like mid high school.
Yeah.
So I didn't. I came to Weezer when Green came out. This is a story that I tell in the podcast. But so part of me buying, I bought Green at the Virgin Records mega store in Times Square in New York.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was there because I was on a trip with our high school choir. This is my senior year.
I did a high school choir trip in New York.
What?
Yeah.
Did you join choir just so you could go on this trip?
That was a big factor.
Did your secret boyfriend convince you to go on this trip? Okay. So in high school, I was dating a girl for a very long time, and sort of started to develop a thing with this guy, and was like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
This is horrifying to me, but let's join choir because he said, hey, join choir. We're going to go to New York.
Yeah.
And so, like, I have, like, very, in my mind, buying Green, and I know how lame this sounds, buying Green was, like, an experimental thing for me.
Yeah.
Or like striking out where I was like, this isn't ska music. I'm going to get into it.
Felt a little edgy.
it felt edgy. Of course, listening to it doesn't feel edgy, but right. buying it for me was like all wrapped up in this like one common element of rebellion, you know? Yeah. Like, I was joining choir, which I didn't care about, just to go on a trip. I was dating this guy while sort of still dating my girlfriend.
Yeah.
I was experimenting with sexuality, and, you know, bam, Weezer.
This is in this whole period.
It's all like it's all tied up in there, and you know. Then I go back and check out Pinkerton and Blue.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And then have been in love, you know, abstractly with the band ever since.
Yeah.
But so yeah, that's how I got. That's how I got into them.
It's interesting, and I remember talking to you before the podcast a couple weeks ago. You felt like it was maybe tied into your feelings of like. I don't know, religion and spirituality, like your feelings about Weezer.
Yeah. I mean, so I would almost say that more than we want to go into like maybe my background.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just with religion.
Yeah.
So I was raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
I am the only member of my immediate family to have been confirmed as a Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I kind of just did it because my mom was like, grandma expects you to.
right.
And so, you know, like did the classes, went on the retreats, did the service, blah, 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 blah. But like, it never, I don't know. Do you remember like there being a specific moment when you like started questioning things or?
I do. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have like a begin time or like an impetus for it. You know, like for me, it was just always question marks.
Yeah. Like, as long as you can remember.
As long as I can remember, yeah. But I also, as long as I can remember, like, had that feeling of, like, there's something important here that I'm not getting, you know? Like, a God-shaped hole in my life.
yeah.
And I think, for me, Weezer and comic books and magic and video games is all me trying to fill a God-shaped hole.
Right, yeah.
And it's almost more, I think I find more satisfaction out of the act of trying to fill the hole than actually... Like if I were to fill the hole, I don't think that would do it.
Wouldn't actually fill the hole.
Right.
It's the completionism thing. It's,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
And as long as I still have hole to fill, like I don't know that feels spiritually satisfying to me. So like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like you know that reminds me of like I heard one definition of yoga, and yoga isn't just the physical type of yoga. Mm-hmm. When people say yoga, there's I don't know. I think in Hinduism there's like four main types. There's like spiritual yoga. There's like loving action yoga. I don't know. I'm out of my element right now. But, anyway,
I love it though.
The idea, like Sharon Salzberg is this teacher who talks about yoga is just all it is just beginning again. And so it's like it's not about beating the game of life. It's not about beating your spirituality. Oh, I won. I won.
I won.
I won spirit.
I believe in God now.
Right. Yeah. Or like, oh, God has, I'm fulfilled. I'm done. I'll never question anything again. I've got it all nice and sealed up.
Yep.
We're good. No, I don't think even the most devout Christian ever has that moment. It is about just the process. What I'm curious though is like, do you think there's something about because the things you listed are all, well, like fictional or like Weezer. I don't know. It's not like autobiographical the stuff at Weezer. It's not like Weezer's not like writing like rock operas that are documentaries too. You know what I'm saying? Like they're these abstract sort of like stories or things. Do you think there's something about the fictional that appeals to you more? Like the deliberately fictional, I should say.
Sure. Well, and I think, I mean, I don't see that as different from Christianity, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, the Bible in many ways is fiction. And a lot of what, you know, the whole... It's teaching through stories, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely find that that idea of teaching through stories or, like, experience through stories compelling.
Yeah.
That's a lot of what draws me to comics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to all, like, storytelling, you know, TV and movies and books and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that maybe draws me to a lot of these, you know, like Magic, like Weezer, like comics, is that there is a like community built in place, that there are these like fan communities.
Yeah.
A huge resource for Jen and I, as we've been recording, My Name is Weezer, is Weezerpedia, the all Weezer wiki, which has any piece of information you would ever want about the band in exacting detail. Like, there's no song that, like, they don't list several different recordings that are being circulated.
Yeah.
You know, all the lyrics, what the lyrics mean, you know, where...
That's crazy, too, because thank God somebody's, like, compiling that. Things like that, there's people who are, like... There are some turbo nerds who are like loving Wikipedia. If you're listening to this and you edit Wikipedia heavily, thank you.
Or your own wikis as well.
Or wiki it is. Thank you for doing that, because I don't have the energy to do that.
Yeah, you're doing the Lord's work there.
Yeah.
But like that doing that, like doing that cataloging, sounds horrific to me.
Oh, me too.
Like, I would never, could never do
totally.
It.
What's interesting to me is that Rivers Cuomo, the lead singer, lead singer and guitarist.
That's right.
And songwriter.
Yeah.
Weezer. he is Weezer.
He is Weezer.
He is.
In a lot of ways, it's him and Pat Wilson, the drummer.
Yeah.
And then, like, whoever else is there.
Yeah. But, like, he's such, he used to be, or I don't know, maybe you know more, you definitely know more about this than I do.
Let's see.
But like Rivers was always, I remember hearing him always very guarded, very like hermit-like, like he would just disappear for a while. And it's odd to me that you can extract all this information, like all this very minute detail. Like, is he just giving lots of interviews? Like, what is his deal?
No, I mean, he doesn't really give too many interviews, but I think there's a lot that you can infer about his personality from song lyrics, and just from Maladroit was mixed by committee. So they took early recordings of a lot of those songs and put them up on whatever the internet was in, you know, 1999
or something,
or whatever, it was.
Yeah.
And like let fans make their own mixes.
Whoa.
And like say fans named the record.
Whoa.
So like Maladroit was kind of a dig at him, you know?
Interesting.
So like in those days, Rivers was posting on their like message boards and was like engaged with the fans.
Yeah.
So like he doesn't do too many like big interviews.
Yeah.
But he's always been engaged with like the absurd Weezer fans.
Yeah.
They're in support of Red. The Red album, they did, Hootenanny tours, where he would invite people to bring their instruments and, like, teach them Weezer songs, and then they would sing and play them together.
Holy shit, how have I not heard of that?
Well, because it's kind of insane. Like, I don't know anyone that's gone to one.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing. Then you can look up, like, clips online, like, Hootenanny. There's a Hootenanny 2, release... it's a big show somewhere in Long Beach, but like it's in a record store and Rivers is wearing a train conductor's outfit like overalls and it's amazing. And it's all like super fans, Weezer super fans, and the Weezerpedia page on it is like, this Weezerpedia contributor played ukulele on this track, this Weezerpedia contributor. So like he's very plugged into, or at least was, I don't know if he still is, very plugged into his own fan scene.
Yeah, that's so cool. Do you think, what is that something that like, because I'm trying to just get at like, what is it that resonates with you about Weezer and his music? Is it that community? Is it like his, like, because that's such a cool, like, such a human thing to do. Like, it's such a not elevating yourself type of thing.
Yeah, it's which also sounds like totally counterintuitive given his,
right,
because he's
right,
got so much like braggadocio in his lyrics.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah,
he's almost a rapper.
And in some ways, it may be something like that is like, oh, I'm so humble, I'm willing to play with my fan. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but it could be spun that way too. It is an unusual rock star relationship.
It is. I can't say that that's what draws me to it though.
Yeah.
I would still say that a sense of community is what drew me to Weezer in the first place, or at the very least, what like solidifies my relationship with, especially those first two records.
Mm-hmm. You came for the experimentation, stayed for the community.
That's right. But yeah, like, college for me was like, you could put on Pinkerton or Blue in any room, and like, everyone's going to have a great time for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Who's throwing shade at the Blue album? I mean, honestly,
it shouldn't be anyone. The thing's almost perfect.
Yeah.
But like, you know, we would put it on, or I guess the bartender would put it on in the campus bar, at the school I went to. And like, that was it. Like, that determined the next 45 minutes. We were all screaming along with Weezer at the top of our lungs again, like blackout drunk and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's college.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that, like, for as much as I liked the music in high school and, you know, like, used it as this, like, this is my experiment, this is my, like, this is me putting my stamp on my own tastes, that college made it, like, a community thing. So, you know, no matter what good I can find in the new records or the newer records, it doesn't really mean anything to me until I can turn it into a social thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. Because, like, whenever Phish comes out with a new studio album, which have been, you know, usually Phish fans aren't huge fans of the studio versions of the album. I mean, usually their studio albums just aren't as good. But there's always...
Well, it's just not, like, what the band does. Yeah.
Right.
It's not what makes them special.
But we always are, like, interested in, like we love talking about, like, oh, which of the 12 songs off the new record, like, which three are going to, like, stay in the rotation, the live rotation? Like, which three are going to be the mainstays? Like, which are we excited about? Which do we hate?
Yeah.
You know, there's, like, even, like, yeah, there's even some camaraderie in, like, ooh, that was a real fucking dud they put out, that, like, that one song. Like, what were they thinking with, like, Sing Monica is one Phish song that people aren't a fan of.
Is that on the new record? Is that on...
No, it's a couple records ago. Okay. Somebody's going to be mad at me for saying that, but whatevs. Sing Monica sucks.
That's right. Just brush it off, man. Just brush it off. Hey, man, unless someone tells you to get fucked to death, I feel like you're okay.
Yeah, I feel okay about that. Okay, so you had... Back to switching some gears back to Catholicism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you feel like you got that community out of that, even if, because you're not, like, if you're questioning it constantly, it would probably be hard to feel community, I would imagine.
Well, I mean, except that, you know, I went to, you know, we had, the classes were called CCD classes, but now for the life of me, I couldn't tell you what that stands for.
That's so funny. I talked to Lorraine earlier on a podcast, and she couldn't remember the initials for those either.
For CCD?
CCD, yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
Somebody get at me. Tell me what's... I'm not gonna Google it. I will not debase myself.
Not to be Googled. but yeah, you know, like, had CCD classes, like, every once a week after school for years. Like, years and years and years. As long as I can remember, like, elementary school, junior high school. And that was, like, a 2 or 3 hour class.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, got to know the people in my classes and all of that. And then that turned into confirmation classes in high school and junior high school. So, like, I did still have, like, a little bit of a sense of community. But, I mean, you're right that I was keeping people sort of, like, at arm's length. Because for most of it was, like, I fundamentally... think what you guys are talking about is silly,
right?
Because I mean, it wasn't, or at least I never perceived it to be, like, a meaningful exploration of religion or spirituality or anything like that. I was also kind of a bad kid just in CCD. Like, I was super good in school, and, like, at home and all of that.
I know your type. Like, I remember your type when I was in youth group. I was a good kid in youth group.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember, and outside of youth group, I was just...
You're just a good kid all the time?
Just way too goody of a two shoes. But, I remember your, like, there were kids who were, like, normally good.
Joe is pointing at me right now, by the way.
I remember you. You were always putting on a good front outside.
That's right.
Yeah, cut up during Sunday school.
Well, like a Eddie Haskell kind of... Are you familiar with Eddie Haskell? Leave it to Beaver?
Yes.
Yeah, Eddie Haskell would always be like, yes, Mr. and Mrs. Cunningham, I'm the good whatever.
Right.
But then would always be like, egging the beeve on to do bad stuff.
The beeve.
I'm talking about that. Leave It to Beaver with much more authority.
I love that we all call him the beeve.
The beeve!
Yeah.
Anyway, you recall. So you recognize that type as someone who was just not good in Sunday school? Or just...
Well, yeah, like a limited bad boy.
Yeah, definitely limited bad boy.
Yeah. How were you a bad boy?
I remember very specifically one class where I sat on the teacher's desk and just asked my own questions of the class.
How old were you?
Maybe like 13.
Oh my God.
Like, not old enough that it was like a meaningful rebellion and not young enough that it was cute.
Were people feeling it?
Who knows? I probably put the blinders on and was just like...
I feel like that's a move that if you're it doesn't matter what you say, if you are confident and you're 13, like, you're going to get a girlfriend out of that.
Well...
Funny you should mention that.
I always felt like the girls at CCD or confirmation classes... that there was an air of like mystery or sexuality about them that I did not normally experience at school. So most of the most people that I was going to confirmation or CCD classes with, I didn't go to regular school with, because I think a lot of them went to, you know, St. Mark's, the Catholic school, and I was just going to public school.
All right.
So I don't know what that was, but I think there are. I think I have some weird wires crossed when it comes to religion and sexuality.
As many of us do.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's like a shame-based thing.
Could be. Could be. Yeah.
This is like 10 years ago now. I recorded a record. I'm also a musician. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you everything about
me. Yeah, man.
I recorded a record, and there's a song on there called Monday Bible Study. Huh. And it was about me like going to extra stuff to like try to get to know this girl better.
Oh, yeah.
But ultimately, knowing that like I don't actually want to spend any time with her. Like, I'm just like horny and 17.
Yeah, or it's, I heard, are you familiar with Alan Watts at all? Do you know who Alan Watts is?
No, I'm not.
Anyway, doesn't really matter, but
it matters, Joe.
Well, but he talks about, like, Christianity having this odd relationship with sexuality and with, like, men, especially, like, Christian men having, sometimes being in love with the idea of love more, or, like, or maybe sometimes, I don't know, in love with breasts, in love with ass, but not necessarily in love with like a complete woman, like a comprehensive,
that's interesting,
like actual like human being type woman. And that we sometimes, maybe it's through the repression of sexuality, and so like the repression, like we don't want to. And
do you think was that Christian men or Catholic men? What was
Christian men in general? Okay. I don't know. Just because, like, when you deny that part, when you're told that part of you is bad, and then maybe you think that the other women are on the same page, and maybe they are.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess they're going for some purity thing, right? Like, that's the ideal. Like, that's the best case scenario. But, I don't know. I think what ends up happening is that you start creating these false images of who you are to each other and of what love looks like.
God, that's so hard. Because, like, when you're creating false images of each other and of yourselves, I mean, especially at that early age, especially, like, in high school, you don't know yourself.
Right.
So, like, how dare you also be projecting a false thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all very...
But I mean, like, I don't know, with me, it would be like, my false image would be like not revealing certain bands I like to my parents, or like, you don't, and which is a normal kid shit, but like, I wish it wasn't, you know? I wish it wasn't like something you had to hide. Like, I wish it wasn't something that you needed to like, yeah, I don't know, to your edgy, and conversely, by the way.
Yes, please.
To like your, I don't know, I was in community theater, and I knew some like, punk type kids, like I knew some like people, like artistic like rebel types, you know.
Yes.
And so I had to hide the part of me that did like religion, the part of me that did like geeky spiritual shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Too, because you're trying to like present this image. And, you know, I think a lot, most people, probably as an adult, I still do that to a huge degree.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we obviously there are like different faces we put forward, but like, there are some things that like the people I work with are never going to know about.
Right.
Like, yeah. And, yeah. It's maybe even less that like I'd be embarrassed. Like maybe I would be embarrassed, but also I just kind of want to like, you don't get to know everything about me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
they say, what, good walls make good neighbors.
Yeah, that's true. Good fences.
Good fences.
Is always how I heard it.
No, all my neighbors have walls in between. No fences, just bricks and bricks and bricks. Yep. But that's interesting too. Like maybe not even just neighbors. Like it's just the idea of having boundaries is not a bad thing, even in your close relationships with people.
Which I think, so this is weird, right? I'm sorry, I'm gonna keep coming back to this.
Please.
Fucking kid telling me to get fucked to death. who I've decided is a kid now.
Yeah.
But like, it's amazing how in like those kind of like modern interactions, you know, the less intimate this relationship is I have with this person, the fewer walls we have.
Mm.
Right? Like a real person isn't going to tell me to my face
no.
to get fucked to death, or that like I'm underrating one of the most important. You know what I mean? Like,
right. There's a the social niceties go out when it's anonymous and over the internet.
Yeah, yeah. But like, yeah. It's almost like that intimacy comes with walls.
Mm. Yeah, like it's a, I don't know, there's a, I don't know, intimacy maybe comes with walls, and then, I don't know, my dream is that the point is that you reach with somebody where you take down all the walls, and that there's no wall, like you.
Is there such a thing?
I don't, man.
Are you without your walls?
Man, I don't know, man. It's, that's why it sometimes maybe is just a fantasy. It's like, and it's.
Yeah.
I tend to overshare a lot, which, hey, great for a podcast, right?
Right, right, right. Exactly what you want.
But not great for, I don't know, with certain relationships. I mean, there is like a, it's not that you have to lie, but I don't know, there's a.
No, I mean, I get that. Like, I've been in so many situations where, like, I don't know what to say, like at a party or mm-hmm. at work or whatever, where, like, some real truth, you know, bubbles out of my mouth, and like before I know it, I'm sharing something too personal with someone.
Yeah.
And like I guess I just don't know whether that like fosters a good relationship or if it just freaks people out.
I have to believe that it can foster a great relationship with people. I think sometimes we do it unskillfully, or maybe
definitely
maybe I think a lot of times it's just like if you're not confident about it, then it's gonna, there's like a, there's just a purely like physiological like response to somebody being unconfident.
Yeah.
But this is what I love about like good stand-up or like good anything really, good podcasting of fucking strangers I don't know, is when they are being confidently honest about even their darkest, weirdest shit.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't know if I agree that walls lead to intimacy, but I do think walls lead to good relationships before you know whether you want
to
be intimate.
Whether there's going to be intimacy there.
Yeah, like, yeah. You can't be intimate with everybody, or else your intimacy...
That's true.
Your intimacy loses its power with those you do have it with. So I guess the walls come in, it's like that's the walls is how you are like a normal cool person. You can just be like a normal dude.
Well, I may have been using like too broad of a definition of intimacy there.
Yeah. Or of walls too.
Or of walls, who knows?
Yeah.
Look, we don't need to police every word that either of us uses.
It's a metaphor.
Yeah, it's a metaphor, mm-hmm. goddammit.
Yeah.
Maybe they're fences.
I have a coworker who like picks apart any kind of metaphor I use. Like, well, I don't know if the analogy really.
I don't know if that holds water.
I'm like, it's a whatevs. So yeah, so you just kind of went through all through high school, just kind of like doing it through the motions with Catholicism and.
Yeah.
And then yeah. After that, you were just kind of like jumping ship.
Well, like, what's the rest of my spiritual journey there?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I had so much like extra doubt like thrown at me. Like I feel like I had a lot of friends who were either, you know, like strong, aggressive atheists, like asshole atheists.
Right, right.
And I remember really connecting with Julia Sweeney's Letting Go of God, mm-hmm. Which is just great. So, I don't know, like I really gravitated towards, it's interesting how much I gravitated towards those like rebelling against it, you know, that like I'm trying to say like there's no friction there, but like I'm obviously attracted to
the friction.
I'm attracted to the friction. I'm attracted to someone saying like God is dead or there is no God. Like I'm there's yeah. a part of me that's always been like, let's talk about that. Like yeah. I want to hear more about that. But like, yeah, like I said, I don't know that there was ever a moment where like I was like, that's it. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's because I'm a pretty decent phony, but like I was able to go through and do all the stuff I needed to do to get confirmed, you know, which includes an interview with the priest.
Right. Right.
Where like I just lied. I remember lying yeah. at confession, mm-hmm. like
making up a
just
sin.
Making shit up because I didn't want to. I don't want to talk to this stranger about yeah. like.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
And like you can't even like. In that context, especially first confession, you're not going to get like a lot of time with the priest.
Yeah.
Who doesn't know you, by the way?
Right.
Who doesn't know you, doesn't really know what your problems are. And there's like a line behind you.
Yeah. Is there a line at those things?
At first confession? Yeah. It's the first confession was like a big ritual. They prepared it. They prepared us for it in CCD. And so like there were two priests and like there were lines.
That's amazing.
And like we didn't even have like confessional booths. It was just like you go up there and you talk to the priest. Yeah. So like if something personal and like moving happened to you, like everyone in your class is that cute girl that you're trying to impress yeah. is gonna see you fucking lose it.
Yeah, save it for the second one.
That's right.
Just say, oh, I jerked off once and be done with it. Just
yeah, or
it
like
moving,
I've been
please.
Mean to my little sister.
Right. But
that was one that I love my little sister.
Yeah.
We're like best friends.
Yeah.
But like I would. Yeah, like
you
that.
Just made up being mean to her?
I just made up being mean to her.
That's so funny. You weren't even actually mean to her.
I wasn't even mean to her. But like, you know, I didn't even go for the softball of like I jerk off.
Right, yeah.
Which was certainly true whenever I was
You're
doing
like, that's none of your business.
Right, that's
father.
None of your business, Father. Frankly, it's a little weird that we'd be talking about it.
But you seem to think it's important.
So yeah, I like there's so much like lying that went into that.
Yeah.
That like I don't know. It never felt like a truthful thing I had to let go of ever.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel bad about lying now or you're kind of like, eh, whatevs?
I feel like this is going to sound like harsher than it is, but I feel like I did what I needed to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
you're just like a soldier. Like,
yes, that's right. I'm a good soldier.
I was following orders.
Onward Christian soldier.
Right.
No, that like. Although I think about this a lot, that like I did it, I got confirmed, I did the whole thing, neither of my sisters did. And the reason I did it was because grandma expects you to. Why would grandma expect me to? There's no precedent that says Eller's kids get confirmed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My older sister got out of it by, she did like a study abroad in Finland her junior year of high school, so she missed it.
Lucky.
And then just like never came back
to
it.
Got to hang out in Finland too.
I don't think she loved that experience, but and then my little sister, it was a much more effective rebel than I was, so and a much more effective homosexual than I was, so you know, props to Courtney for like taking everything interesting about me and doing it better.
I mean, do you think that experimentation phase that you have with your sexuality, do you think that was another aspect of the friction you're feeling? You're like, oh, I know
that I was attracted to it because
partially because of the friction of like, oh, you're not, you shouldn't be gay, you're a confirmed
Catholic. I mean, possibly. I would say now that I identify myself as bisexual, if I have to identify myself as anything, which I don't necessarily like doing, but...
yeah, Kinsey scale, baby. Come on.
Yeah, it's fluid, man. And also, like, I've been dating Sarah for, like, 8 years on and off now. Like, I feel like I'm a Sarah sexual at this point. Uh-huh. And then we'll jerk off to anything. So.
Which is... can you just define Sarah sexual for me, please?
Oh, that,
I don't even know.
That no, I'm saying oh, my girlfriend's name is Sarah. S-A-R-A-H sexual.
Man. I was thinking S-E-R-A, like I was like, oh, that's a really highly sexual.
Ooh, what are we talking about?
I thought I was hip.
No, man, you gotta get down with the Sarah sexuals. But so was I attracted to homosexuality or any of that experimentation because there was friction there? Maybe. Like,
yeah, sure, why not?
I know that that it's the same kind of thing that makes me like smile when I'm around someone that's like doing a drug that I'm uncomfortable with. Or the kind of thing that makes it hard for me to say no to if someone's like, do you want to do this thing that makes you uncomfortable? Like, I don't know. I do like tend to engage in that stuff.
Let's explore that discomfort.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of... I think that's what a lot of great comedy can obviously come from, is exploring
the
discomforts we feel and see, or pointing out discomforts or whatever, sitting in them for a while.
Yes.
It's like a, you know, that's why I think there's like the old school, like, okay, there's people, when people say Zen nowadays, they usually think of like new agey type shit.
But yeah,
like
yeah.
The original Zen tradition is so fascinating to me, which is like basically... bunch of old guys in China who were like vaguely aware of Buddhism, vaguely aware, because it was like all cult, like you have to remember, like back in China, right, like they're not like ideas like Buddhism and Taoism and like Confucianism, like these aren't formalized systems,
they don't have names like that,
right? Yeah. They're just like the things people think.
Yeah,
they're just like life, it's just, yes, like culture.
Yes,
you know. So like these were dudes who were basically just calling bullshit on everything.
Yeah,
including,
which is amazing.
Yeah, and that's like all what they when pressed, like all of the Zen kind of lineage texts are basically like a koan is basically designed to piss you off and confuse you because there's no answer to it. It's just like they're like riddles. Like, oh, does a dog have Buddha nature? And he's like, bullshit. And you're like, what do you mean? What do you mean? No, I need an enlightenment. Give me it. He's like, no. Just enjoy the friction of it, you know?
Right, because there is nothing you can fill that God-shaped hole with. You just got to try to fucking fill it.
Fucking A, man. Fucking A.
I mean, for me, that's so much of what it, you know, like... how I process information or like process my identity even. You know, like you mentioned that like I'm attracted to all these like fictional worlds or fictions in comics or Weezer songs, but I'm almost more attracted to talking about them than I am to the worlds themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Trying to make sense of it is the juice for me, you know?
Cool. Well, about at that time, do you, for the gimmick of the show.
Oh, yeah. We want to build a religion?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Build your own religion. Yes.
Sorry. Did I fuck up the name of your show?
Patrick, man, this is called Choose Your Own Religion.
Choose. I mean, really, we're building it. If we're choosing it,
we're right. To choose. And we're back to Choose Your Own Religion.
We're back to Choose Your Own Religion.
Okay, so if you had, and, you know, people...
Do you have guidelines here?
I have bullet points.
Oh, perfect.
That's the conceit of the show, folks. I don't know if you guys knew this. I'm not remembering this off the top of my head. I do have a bullet list.
That's good. Even when you think you're going to remember everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so people interpret this as like, should this be my ideal religion? Should this be a cool religion? I don't know. Dealer's choice.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean, to be fair, I think you're the dealer in this.
Like, it's my choice.
The host is the dealer. So, look, I'm going to pick apart your metaphors.
God damn it. Okay, so for our religion.
Yes.
What's our God structure? Do we have one God, many gods, no God, a hierarchical structure? Is there like... a god, is it like Zeus, Greece?
I'll keep saying it. I guess this is something that I actually believe in and find important because I've said it many times now. A god-shaped hole.
Mm.
Like, so I don't know if that requires being indoctrinated into something at an early age so that you have something to miss.
Mm-hmm. All the members have to have had something before.
Yeah, you have to have something before.
Yeah.
You have to have something, you know, obvious and meaningful that you're always trying to replace.
Right on, yeah. Gotcha Pole, by the way, it keeps sounding like a Smashing Pumpkins song.
I mean, it probably sounds like Heart-Shaped Box, the Nirvana
that's
song.
It. Yeah, that's it. That, a new Seattle.
Yeah, yeah.
Seattle area. Okay.
I mean, the Pumpkins were Chicago-based, but, you know.
They were not Seattle?
No,
they Chicago. They seem like a fucking Seattle band. Whatever. Well,
yeah, they're all part of that, like, that grunge. Look, we could do a Smashing Pumpkins podcast.
Yeah.
I would be down.
I would be fucking up metaphors left and right. What's so Gotcha, so that sort of encapsulates the overarching ethos of it too, is like trying to fill that which can't be filled.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, so maybe I need you to define ethos.
What's like the overall point of it? Like, what's the overall thing you're getting at? Like, what's the game of this?
What's the game of the religion?
Yeah,
throwing out improv lingo.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it would just have to be discussion based. That like everything that you're trying to fill that hole with needs to be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
That like you need to find someone else who will try to fill their hole with that thing.
Yeah.
And then talk about how it does that for you or how it doesn't do it for you. You know, like,
yeah.
Talking about Weezer and being like, here's how it's meaningful to me, how is it meaningful to you?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Batman, here's how Batman's meaningful to me, how is it meaningful to you?
Yeah.
So I like, for me, I think, and it's the fucking social thing again, of like needing to have other people to experience it with.
Right on. Yeah.
What?
That,
what?
Yeah, you did that. That's part's,
it?
No, but that's not it for the whole religion.
USA. Oh, okay.
That's it for that part. Like, I don't have anything else to add there. Do we have any rules on this? Do we have any guidelines if it's a discussion based religion?
So, yes. I would say, I'm probably going to quote from our Retcon Punch like writing guidelines here, but that like statements of quality or your preferences out the window.
Mm.
Like talk about the thing itself.
Mm.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty. And also let's assume that the thing we're talking about is the most important thing in the world.
Mm.
And not the other things related to it. If we're talking about an issue of Deadpool, let's not talk about the fucking movie.
Mm.
Right?
Right.
Let's not talk about an issue of Deadpool 50 issues ago. Let's talk about this one.
Or how it's really about X-Men.
Yeah. Nope. Let's talk about what's in front of us.
Yeah.
Like, and this may be, you know, less related to like the kind of filling the God hole question, but just in general with criticism or analysis, I almost fetishize talking about the thing over talking about not the thing.
Uh-huh.
And there's so much of back to that Pitchfork giving make believe
a point eight.
So much of that review was about, like, it closes with, like, does this tarnish the legacy of like, fuck you, that's not what this record is. Like, the record is the record. Talk about the record. Don't talk about the legacy of Weezer.
Mm, yeah.
You know, let's talk about the thing we're talking about.
Cool.
So that's my one rule.
That's your rule.
That's my rule.
Is there, do we have any, is there any kind of, like, text to the religious text?
Let's see. Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics. I don't know.
We can include that if you want.
It's a good book.
Not Pitchfork.
No, definitely. Okay, I've been writing Pitchfork kind of hard.
That's okay if there's not.
No, I mean, Understanding Comics actually was very important for me to understanding how to talk about comics as a medium, because he so much of what McCloud writes about is how like the reader of a comic book is a more active participant than like someone watching a movie, because you're dictating the pace. You can move forwards and backwards in time. A lot of the story happens in the empty spaces between panels, you know, like you fill in a lot of it. And so how the page interacts with you know, your brain to make the story happen, like that all feels very self-contained, you know. It's just a relationship between you and the book. So sure, I'll go with Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics.
Perfect.
That's our text.
Perfect. Okay, so as far as any kind of like serve, like I have this under section under worship. I guess service, is it just the discussion is sort of the worship service then?
Service as in like a, or like a mass, or
right,
what, what the, yeah,
right, mass. I forget that you Catholics say mass.
We say mass. So Bach didn't write like 1,000 of these things to call them a service. Okay. It's a mass.
So yeah, so is it the, since it's discussion based, is it just like it's two,
it's
people
ongoing
talking?
It is forever.
It is forever.
We are never not in in a service.
Wow. Yeah. That's a pretty radical view, man.
I mean, no, it's a, what do most people say for that kind of thing? Because I know a lot of people like come on here with like kind of a wishy-washy idea of what they want there. Because it's a weird question too, of like, sure, what is your own religion,
right?
And I know like a lot of people have like kind of soft ideas, or at least unorganized ideas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. People have different like typical. I mean, your answer is fine, by the way. Your answer is just fine. I'm just saying,
all
like,
I wanted was your validation.
You're like, I don't even care.
I don't care anymore. Thank you. My answer was fine. No, but I mean, like, for real, I feel like,
oh, I don't know,
this is one that people probably push up against, right?
I don't know. Whether it's like, with some people, it's like, I don't know, a regular meeting place. Like, I don't know. It seemed like, I totally know what you're saying. And like, I think even like a good, or an ideal, let's say, Christian view, it's like, yeah, oh, we should always be in communion with each other. We should always be in fellowship. We should always be worshiping God. Like, there should, sure, be, there should be no point. However, that being said, we do have a Sunday meeting.
That's true.
Where we all get together and explicitly do it.
It's because Sunday, it's early.
Because we know we're not gonna be actually, in this case, we wouldn't be literally talking about it all the time unless we dedicate, right, some time to it. But if it's an ongoing conversation, then it's an ongoing conversation.
Well, but I mean, there are obviously also, you know, things like just using the examples of comics, or like comics have conventions, you know, and those can be when you're letting yourself just like experience it. I imagine, you know, obviously like a fish show or something, where you're just like, this is my life. This is why I let all of this in now. And like, maybe there does need to be that component of like being uncomfortable and being like having it be your everything, mm-hmm, for a little bit. You know, like we were talking about going to DCM, mm-hmm, the Del Close Marathon in New York, mm-hmm, which is, you know, 48 hours of improv. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an uncomfortable experience.
Yeah.
It's you stay up too late, you get too drunk, you, uh-huh, see too much fucking improv.
Yeah.
But like, you are closer to it for that kind of exhaustion. So maybe if there are services, they happen every couple months, mm-hmm, and it's everyone goes to it and participates in it intensely.
It's like a convention.
It's a convention, yeah. My services are conventions.
A quarterly convention. Where, yeah, damn it, we talk.
Yeah, damn it, we talk about it.
And not anything else. Yeah, talk about the thing.
We talk about the thing and not the things surrounding the things.
Cool. Perfect. Since community is an important aspect of,
right,
stuff to you, I mean, what's our community look like?
Oh God, I mean,
is everybody?
Well, I feel like the community, what the community looks like, it could be everybody. What the community looks like is going to be driven by who's in the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a weird question, yeah. Like
what does it look like, or who's in it, or?
Look, I mean, like, because the question is like, what is the community?
It's circular logic.
It is circular logic. Yeah, like
the community is
who's into it.
Yeah,
yeah. And you know, if it's looking like something I'm not happy with, like, well, okay, well, what are you going to do?
Right, yeah.
Also, I don't know what a community I'm not happy with looks like.
All right, well.
I would just have to be, you know, people.
It is what it is.
Willing to talk about the thing.
The community is the community. It's not the community.
So what you're saying is the community, while being the community, is also not the community.
Right, it's definitely not anything that's not the community.
This is correct.
Yeah. I'm glad we settled that. Do we have any kind of special program for the youth? Do we have any kind of confirmation?
Confirmation or like a youth outreach kind
either
of
way,
thing?
Either way. Do we have a youth group, a confirmation class? Do we have CD, our own version of CDCC class?
CCD. Yeah. Not CDC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think kids especially have a hard time talking about what's important to them. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's hard at that age to separate, like, this is important to me from, like, here's what the thing is. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I certainly couldn't have told you why Weezer was important to me as a senior in high school.
Right.
But as a 33-year-old man, I can say it was part of me being experimental.
Yeah, yeah.
I can wrap a nice little narrative bow around it.
Yeah, you know how that story ends.
I do know how that story ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird to think that in that moment you don't know how the story ends.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe ends is, you know how that chapter ends.
No, I died. I'm done.
It's over.
I died. It's over.
Okay, and then finally, is there any kind of outreach at large to the non-community at large? Are we evangelical about this at all?
Oh man, probably a little.
Just to the guys who are telling us to go fuck ourselves.
Yeah, but I mean, do you know what I did in that situation? What did
you do?
Nothing. I didn't engage the guy at all. So we might be too cowardly to be evangelical.
That's fine.
No, I mean, I think evangelism kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Sure.
I can't really think of a...
Typically, the people who are into evangelism are like the people who already... are evangelists, like, are literally evangelist Christians. I don't know many,
sure.
I really don't know that many people who are like not evangelical Christians themselves, and you're like, I love some good old like selling me what you
like, yeah, religion, yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah, I mean, evangelical Christianity is like the only religion that really tries to push itself on other people. That,
yeah,
it's the only religion with like a marketing department,
right?
You know,
right?
I
mean, I think a lot of other ones have their own subtle,
yeah,
soft way of doing it, a classier way.
No one else calls themselves evangelicals, though.
Right, it's right there in the title.
It's right there in the title.
I guess you advertise the convention, right?
Yeah.
The quarterly conventions, it's like, hey, we got the talking thing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
The come talking on out. Thing.
This is well-named.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. It's we all end up being evangelical about the things we like.
Very true.
To some capacity, right?
Like, very true.
I'm sure you've tried to get other people into fish.
Oh,
to
boy.
Varying degrees of
oh,
success.
Oh, boy, have I. And I learned a while back to no longer do that.
No. I'm sorry.
No, you know what? I don't feel sorry for me. I feel sorry for
that's
them.
Right.
I truly do. I'm like, you are missing out on an incredible word.
I'm having a transcendent experience over here. You don't get to have that.
Yeah.
Because you didn't want to.
Very passive aggressive, Patrick.
So let's say no.
No. Cool. Do we have a title for this religion? It's always the hardest part.
Yeah, that is the hardest part.
Yeah.
So what have we...
I mean, possible things we've thrown out, like...
Oh, no. God-shaped hole.
God-shaped hole.
God-shaped hole. That's it.
Boom. Perfect. Done. Cool, man. Well, thanks for doing this.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah,
I enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, man. I'm gonna plug... Well... I'm going to cut this part off.
Okay, that's fine.
Well, that's the show, everyone. Thanks again to Patrick Ellers for coming out. Check out My Name is Weezer on Stitchers and iTunes. And subscribe to this show if you like this show. And I love y'all and everything y'all do. And if you're listening to this in the morning or early afternoon, have a good day. Bye.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?